How are you doing? Standing outside in the beautiful spring air and the wind wisps across my face. I set lavender and sage and tobacco and cedar in my smudge bowl, strike a match, bring life to the flame, and shelter it against the breath of the spring air that's rushing past me. I light them. A surge of aroma comes up out of my smudge bowl, and I stand there, and I take a moment. I center myself. I look down around the surroundings, the miniature people below me, walking across the great fields, looking at the mounds, the sacred sites. Above them, at 56 feet in the air, I take my smudge bowl, and I make an offering to the gods, to the grandfathers, to the great Wetumpka. I send my blessings and thoughts down to Gaia, the mother of the earth, the creator of all. And the fragrant aroma of the smoke caresses the tops of the spring buds on the trees, and it wafts across the acres and glances across the surface of the water on the lake. This is a place to reflect, to become whole, and maybe to bring into an understanding that not everything we know is real, and not everything that is real is true. This is a voyage through the esoteric knowledge of not man, but of nature and earth. You're listening to Esologic Radio, and I'm your host, Patricia Cleveland. And the purpose of the show is to perhaps cross-reference the experiences that you're having in your life to the relationships with your animals, nature, or maybe the higher understanding of consciousness of mankind. I took a journey over to Blakely, Georgia, and I visited a place called the Kokomo Mounds. It's a very old place. It's old, so old, that they really are still trying to figure out what the people who lived there used to do. I stood atop a great mound, and I asked for spring blessings. I asked for the wisdom that is locked inside of every cell that makes up my body. It doesn't matter whether I come from the essence of a star child. It doesn't matter if perhaps I'm a reincarnated monk. Maybe I'm a Hindi priest. Maybe I've been a witch. Maybe I've been a simple person of the land. All of these life experiences are locked within who I am. And at this point in time, I have the ability to laugh and apply my imagination and bring them forward, just like you. Because sometimes we have these moments of deja vu, or it just feels familiar. Or you run across somebody and you just know that somewhere inside of you, you know that person. You've maybe shared time with them in the past. All of these experiences defy the things that were taught in school. Just like standing on top of the mound at the Kokomo, I was able to watch different people walk across this massive open plain. The field in front of this huge mound of not just earth, but very specific clay. This massive field at one time served as a plaza, the center of a thriving native community. Now, the mound that I'm standing on is a pyramid. And once upon a time, there used to be a dwelling where the leading family, the governing family, the tribal chief had his house. And it's so amazing to underestimate how these people used to live and think. We tend to think, oh, they were just the hunter-gatherer people. Oh, they really didn't have any technology. They just survived. They grew corn. They picked berries. They maybe hunted the animals on the land. But when you actually go back and start researching some of these sacred sites, you start to learn that there was a lot more going on, that the ancient peoples knew much more than what we do today as modern man. You see, I look at the construction of this massive mound. It's huge. They estimate that it took 1,100,000 1 gallon buckets of dirt, or let's say clay in this case, to build this massive place where two houses used to be on the top. The sacred place where the leaders of the community lived. They were on top of a pyramid. And I wonder why it was so important for them to live up there. The pyramid itself is actually made out of very simple materials. White clay constructs the majority of the mound. But when you look at it, it's not white at all. They built this mound, this pyramid, out of white clay. And then, for some mysterious reason, they covered it with red clay. So that when you now look at it, it's that rusty orange color of the southern soil. You don't see the white. And below me are people running around, going across the plains, pretending they were Indians. There's parents teaching their children about the ancient stories, the histories that the archaeologists have created to try and explain this mysterious mound and this series of small burial sites. But did they get it right? Well, I don't really know, because it makes no sense at all why Indian people would build a massive pyramid and cover it with red clay, and then their leaders would place their houses on the top. Maybe it's kind of like the Egyptian pyramids, but in reverse. See, the Egyptian pyramids were actually made out of man-made cement. And I'm saying that based on the discoveries that they found actually human hair in these massive blocks that construct, say, the largest pyramid at Giza. So these Egyptian pyramids were made out of red clay, sand. And then they were faced with white stone. Yeah, the reverse of what the Indians here in Blakely, Georgia, were doing with their mounds. Oh, I climbed down and I took out my little cell phone, and I have an EMF meter on it. And I can tell you that I found some really interesting things when I turned it on. If you take a break and say, hold that moment. This is Isologic Radio, and I will be right back. Have you ever lit, say, sage leaves, or maybe lavender, and just walked around your property or fanned them through your house. It tends to clean the air, smudging, moves stale things, stagnant energy out of your way. And I did this traditional cleanse on the top of a massive pyramid of white and red clay. An energy point, beaming energy up into the universe. Or maybe it's a receiver pulling the energy down. I stepped down off of this massive mound, and I went to the base of it, and I pulled out my EMF reader, and that's reading electromagnetic fields. Now, everything has an electromagnetic field. Your body does. Your computer does. Your cell phone. It's quite a mixture of, different rates and ranges. And when I was standing at the base of the pyramid, I pointed my meter at the base, and it only read about 430. And when I took my meter and pointed it at the top of the pyramid, it spiked. It went all the way up to 680. So why as a mound of dirt in the middle of an Indian community in the southern part of Georgia have such an amazing range of electromagnetic fields going on? This brings me to the question of, did the ancient peoples have a knowledge about earth energy, how to tap into the pulse, the Schumann resonance, which we know about today in science? Did they have a knowledge about how to trap and channel energy? And this brings a curious idea back to me as an organic farmer. You see, I like to use my minerals in the soil to influence the well-being, the health of my animals. And I use music and prayer and the wind. I use flags or material to change how the wind moves through our property. I've used mirrors to amplify the effects of sunlight on areas that weren't getting enough energy to produce food. So I have been playing with organic forms of energy to enhance the ability to change the state of wellness in my animals. So maybe I'm playing with something that's very, very old. And maybe the traditional peoples at the Kokono Mounds actually were trapping energy. And just like the pyramids in Egypt or the pyramids over in Bosnia, the apex of those pyramids were bringing in energy and then pulsing the energy out. You see, the top of the pyramids in Egypt used to have golden caps. They most probably had quartz crystals with them as well. And so these are amplifiers and conductors of organic energy, natural energy, free energy, the same energy that Tesla was trying to talk to us about at the beginning of the 19th century. Yes. Maybe the Indians weren't so silly after all. Maybe they were using the base of that pyramid to amplify the fertility of the seeds for their crops. Maybe their knowledge was not as thorough as generations of people that were using earth energy a long time before the people at the Kokomo Mounds. And this brings it all back into the human consciousness. And where are we going with our thoughts, and what are we doing? And sometimes I look at the people, all those people that were walking around the base of the mound, the people that didn't walk up the 56 feet in the air stairway to get to the top. Do you know how many people walked up to the top of the mound? One. One curious little girl. And she had a spark of life and a purity of spirit that she danced around with joy on the top of the mound. And then when she was done, she went down and she waved at me from the base. And then she ran. And she went all the way around this huge complex, and she visited each mound. There was about 18 mounds. Some of them, they don't know what they were used for. Maybe, if you do a comparison with other mound sites and serpent mounds, and maybe the stone circles of Michael Tellinger's book out of Johannesburg on Adam's calendar and the sacred temples of the African gods, maybe the ancient peoples had these huge networks that trapped and stored energy so that they didn't have to use fossil fuels and electrical wires. Maybe they were able to trap this energy. Maybe that energy amplified the spiritual connection. Maybe that's the beginning of coming into the human consciousness and the earth consciousness and bringing us into a place of the collective one consciousness. This is all subjective food for thought. But I can tell you here at the farm, I use energy. What do I do with it? Well, I use the human energy of intent and the human energy of imagination to actually change how animals respond in their physical shape and form. I use energy, and whether it's a shamanic-based energy or a natural intuitive gift, I use energy to open up gateways in the body so that the body can recognize where it's had maybe a trauma from generations before, maybe through the mother, the grandmother, and so on back. Or maybe there's a history, an energetic imprint that's locked in the DNA, or maybe in the fluid, the water that makes up the body. And so I use my intent, my intuitive gift, in relationship to the harmonics of the land that we have here at the farm. And when animals come in here, they change. And when people come and do retreats and visits here, they find their connection, their inner self. They discover the difference in being trained and being given information, so taught, and having the freedom to develop. You see, I think a lot of the times we look at animals and we go, ah, what do we know about life? We just do whatever we want to do with our animals. They're silly things. They keep us happy. And with that thought, take a moment, take a breath, hold space, and I'll be right back. Yes, You know, you look at your dog and you go, I just think he's amazing. He can run out there and catch a ball and play with his friends. And when I ask him, he comes and when I call him, he knows how to walk on a leash and be beside me. Or maybe you have a cat. And some of us actually have our cats trained, or we believe we have our cats trained. Yes. We enjoy our animals. They bring great joy to our lives. But then there's animals who, I don't know whether to feel sorry for them or to just honor and respect the fact that that's the fate, that's where they're supposed to be in life. We have animals that we can't train that are declared dangerous, things that we can't control. And maybe it's because the energy that's running through that animal's body isn't in harmony with the physical form that spirit, that soul, that self-aware intelligence has taken on as physical form. You see, we as humans think we have the responsibility to train animals. And this has been going on for, oh, very long time. I think they call it domestication, actually. And when we domesticate an animal, we try to get him to physically agree to what we want them to do. And that's what we call training. We train the dog. We train the horse. What is it we're actually doing? We're training the animal to physically commit to do something that they may normally or naturally do, but we're training them to do it on command, often for horses, in certain postures or ways of moving. But we forget this one other part. We train the body, we train the dog, we train the horse. Sometimes we train the cat to actually physically ignore the sensation of their discomfort, their physical pain. And I know it's kind of not the nicest thought to take and consider. But have you ever had a dog that when you say, sit down, he goes, looks at you and goes, do I really have to? And you go, yes, this is obedience training. I would like you to sit down. And the dog goes, oh, well, okay, I'll sit down, but how long do we have to do this for? And so the dog sits beside you on the leash and he looks up at you, goes, I really like you. How long do I have to sit like this? Because, I really, really am uncomfortable and I'd like to move. And we don't understand that. We understand that we have been given a protocol. We have been given a list of things that we need to train that dog to do. And if the dog doesn't agree to do them, then we have a training problem. We have a behavior problem. We have a dog who will not agree to do what the human asks him to do. But when we train an animal, when we train our children, when we ourselves are trained in society, we do not understand the role that that discomfort actually plays in creating behavior. And so when I put my leg across the horse's back, and sit there and gently squeeze him with my legs and ask him to move forward, I become very aware of his discomfort. Because you see, if the horse is uncomfortable, it's not just a training problem, it's actually a direct potential threat to my well-being. And so what I do here at the farm is I'm trying to change the way people think about interacting with animals. Maybe about how to interact with your children or perhaps other adults on the planet. You see, if we moved away from trying to control and trying to make things happen, we would understand the purity of the relationship. We would understand that moment of potential that we all have to change. And that moment of potential actually gives us some amazing positive opportunities to use our imagination. And when we are free from thinking about the training task and we move into teaching, providing knowledge, then we move into the place where knowledge holds the potential for growth. Training just says you're going to do a routine, and you're going to do that routine whether you want to or not, because that is what's expected. And you're going to do that training routine whether it's in your physical best interest or not. Just think of all those basketball players out there training. Yeah, they're working hard. They're learning where to stand, where to catch the ball, when to run with it, when to pop it into the basket. They're physically training. And when they're done that physical activity, geez, they've got physiotherapists and chiropractors and doctors, just a list of medical professionals on hand to ice arms and to stretch out muscles and to fix twisted joints, maybe to screw fractures back together again. So when we train, we are actually stressing the body. We're stressing the body and we're causing the pain already present in the body to amplify, kind of like the body starts screaming at you. And that pain's there because the energy that's flowing through you right now, your electromagnetic field, is maybe trapped in certain places and it just can't get free. And the reason why it's trapped is the posture of your mother. Your mother's conformation is a direct imprinted pattern in the cellular memory of who you are. And so some of us will start to take on the way our mothers walk or sat or stand. Some of us will carry weight in the same places or have the same facial expressions. Our patterns, tonality of our voice may parallel our mother's. So when we come into the physical form, our energy has to flow and fit into the body. And then we go into self-denial because we don't know how to survive, to live in the real world. Because you see, we're so used to being interactive with energy that when we come into the physical form, we need somebody to teach us how to be human. And what's happened lately is that there's not too many people teaching humans how to be humans. Instead, we train them. We train people, just like we train the dog, just like we train the horse. We ask them to deny who they are, to go out and sacrifice their bodies, go to work, break yourself down, come home, take an Advil, have a drink, do some marijuana, whatever is your release. And nobody is teaching us the knowledge of how to be human and how to actually work with the energetic energy, the fields of energy within who we are, within our animals, and within the space around us. So now, just take a breath and maybe close your eyes and try to feel who you are inside. This is Patricia Cleveland at Isologic Radio, and I will be back in a minute. Thank you. Can you feel your thoughts? Can you feel your heart? Take a breath. Can you feel your lungs fill up with life? This is Isologic Radio, and I'm your host, Patricia Cleveland. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so by sending us an email at isologicradio@gmail.com. You can also find me on Facebook if you type in The Balanced Horse Project. Okay, The Balanced Horse Project. Or you can go to our website, which is thebalancedhorseproject.net. We're trying to introduce the concepts of quantum mechanics into the scientific animal world to perhaps support the idea that there's a lot more to life than just doing the surgery or doing the drugs. And our research has taken us down some pretty amazing storylines. You see, at the Balanced Horse Project, we stopped training horses. We took horses who had survived training, and we gave them the opportunity to experience knowledge. And when they experienced knowledge, they empowered themselves. And when they empowered themselves, do you know what they did? They empowered me as well. You see, knowledge is a really amazing tool because you can take knowledge and it gives you the freedom to think. Training puts you into a pattern and says, please don't think. Pretty well the way things go at work, way things are done in schools, perhaps the way things are done in economics, politics, and medicine. Just accept it. Follow the common path. When you have knowledge, though, you can think. And when you think, all kinds of expanded opportunities come to mind. And when you take that knowledge and you apply it, not so much in the academic form, but let's say, take the idea of sitting on top of the pyramid at the Kokomo Mounds. Take the knowledge of what it was constructed of, how high it is, its location in relationship to other mound builder sites, to other pyramids. And then sit still for a minute and just relax. And let your imagination take that knowledge and reshape it and move it. And maybe in a breath, it'll make it into a completely new idea. An idea, a growth, something that you take and make bigger, a development. You see, energy does not fit into a routine. It does not like to be in a pattern. Energy likes to spread out. It likes to move in, around, and through. Energy can create and destroy. Energy can define. Or it can challenge your definitions. And I think that's where we are right now in this human experiment. I think there's different levels of thought and consciousness. I think that there are the people that are trained and accept what they're told to be the truth. I think that our animals are trained to the point where they are willing to commit suicide. And trust me, I have seen animals commit suicide. Because they can't deal with the lack of human development. We have an opportunity to take knowledge. And it doesn't matter what knowledge it really is. It doesn't matter if it's knowledge from ancient peoples or it's knowledge from a higher self. It doesn't matter if it's the knowledge that your dog just shared with you when he sat, not sat straight, but he rolled his hips and spread his hind legs off to one side. That dog just gave you the knowledge that he has a sore back, and it's most probably happening right behind his shoulder blades. And so he can't sit straight. And if you ask him to sit straight, you're training him to go into self-denial. You're training him to desensitize his physical body and not recognize the physical pain that is present. And when he denies the presence of that physical pain, he starts to injure his body in different places. That's knowledge that animals share with us every day, and we don't pick it up because we're trained to believe that that animal is not very smart. We are trained to believe that we trained that animal and that everything he does in resistance to our request is a spiteful personality instead of an energetic awareness of self trying to communicate knowledge. And when you can take that concept and move it into a larger framework, you become a lot more aware. You grow. You develop. You actually become more mature. Energy helps us to expand our thoughts. Knowledge gives us permission to move into creativity. And training locks us into a life of self-denial. When I work with animals, it's a totally different experience than having this conversation with you today. When I work with animals, it's completely energetic. It's very intuitive. You see, I stop training myself. And I listen to the knowledge of the animals. And when I did that, gateways of energy just started pouring into my life. I have serendipitous opportunities to learn. I have gained experiences that would make an amazing movie. Everything from backroom dark black operations, higher knowledge in quantum mechanics and physics, all the way through to how to organically change the posture, the conformation, the pain that's locked into the body of not only horses, but dogs, cats, cows, goats. And dare I say, within my own family, yes, I have learnt a whole layer of new information. And it didn't come from books, and you will not find it in a university. And maybe some of the wise men, the soothsayers, the shaman, the healers, will have this in their secret conversations. But for me, at this moment, it's a reality. You see, using energy, being brave enough to develop an idea, moves you into a whole new way of thinking and being. So hold that thought and take a breath. This is Isologic Radio, and I will be back in a minute. Energy. It can be as simple as the wind. It can be as warming as the sun. It can be as terrifying There's a cold darkness at the bottom of the lake. But energy surrounds us every day. And yet, you know, you're listening to this radio show. You're taking in the conversations about metaphysical material, organic healing, energetic awareness, greater consciousness, channeled information. And yet, you will go out your front door and you are trained not to talk about it. You hold it in your heart and you ask it to shelter you, to open pathways so that it's safe for you to travel through your day. But you see yourself as one person. You have been trained to see yourself as an isolated thing. One being, one human. And you perceive sometimes that you're the only human on the planet that's having that experience, that energetic experience. Maybe you saw something that you weren't sure was there or not. Maybe something happened that you thought about 5 minutes ago, and then right now, there it is, it happened. Or maybe you said a prayer and you asked for help. You asked for the things you need to support you in life, to cure your body, to provide you with spontaneous miracles of healing. But you don't go out and talk about it. So that leads to why. Are we afraid to stand up and say that maybe all the things that we were taught in school, the things that we are trained to believe, that yes, they hold benefit and they have a potential of knowledge. But are they true? Because you see, they're training us to not talk about the energy, the potential of the higher consciousness. They are asking us to stay in a system of self-denial. And when we stay in that system, some people generate disease. Just like the horses I work with. When they are put in states of deny who you are and do what I ask you to do, the horses will start to get ulcers and get sick. And when they're pushed physically hard and exposed to a lot of stress, their bodies start to break down. Are you at that state yet? I have seen animals commit suicide. And you will go, oh, it's just a stupid animal. He didn't know what he was doing when he ran out in front of that car. Let me tell you a quick story about a horse. It was down in the south. And sometimes trainers don't like other people coming into their barns and telling them that maybe they could change what they were doing with the horse to develop it, to give it a chance to become a partner rather than a worker bee. And sometimes trainers can be pretty hard on horses, harder than you can ever be on a dog or a cat. You see, the horse is the only animal that human beings take and change how their feet work and ask them to carry weight on their backs and put a piece of metal in their mouth and pull on the reins and say, hey, I want you to pay attention to me. And when they don't pay attention, there's consequences. Your dog gets to run out in the dog park or go for a walk. A lot of horses that are in training only get to come out of their stalls when they get ridden. So an owner asked me to go to the barn because she felt that something just really wasn't going well. And I made arrangements to come, and the trainer said, no, don't come today. And I phoned back and made a new arrangement. He says, okay, we'll come that day. And as I'm getting in the truck and ready to go down to the new farm, he goes, oh, don't come, don't come. And this goes on for 2 months. And finally, I had an appointment. And the man actually agreed to make the commitment. And so I drove into the yard, and being one of those smart, chauvinistic southern men, he smiled at me as he walked out of the barn with the horse, with a lead shank with a chain, and he walked the horse to the huge outdoor arena, and the horse was dancing with absolute joy. I'm going outside. I'm going to get personal time. And the man looked me straight in the eyes as he opened up the gate and turned the horse free. That was the horse I was supposed to work on. And he had this arrogance about him, and he smiled. It's like, hey, I just let that horse go, so I'm going to waste your time. Maybe you like to go home. I'm sure that was the intent behind what he was doing. But I walked up to him, and I tried to hold a positive place. And I carried on a conversation as we watched the horse run in what one person would see as a state of joy. But I saw this moment go across his face, and a thought hit my heart. And the horse wheeled around, and he looked this trainer straight in the eye. And I was like, oh my gosh, don't do this, don't do this. I'm here to help you. And the horse looked at me, and he pawed the ground, and he swung around, and he ran off. Now, I have to tell you before I go further that this huge outdoor arena was made out of steel panels. They call them stock panels. And there, in between each section, is a post. And all these panels were held together with these, like snow fence posts, a T-post, except for one post. It was a pipe. It was the only one. And it was filled with cement. And the trainer laughed and said, oh, it's a stupid horse. Can't do a thing with him. So I'm glad you finally got here. And as those words came from his mouth, the horse wheeled at, struck at the air as he stared and thrashed at the trainer, threatening him to come in and try and catch him. And then he turned once more, and he ran to the far end, and he made a big circle. And he dug down, put his head down, and pulled through the sand with his front feet, and he ran and ran and ran as fast as he could. Now, is this a dumb horse? A smart horse? A desperate horse? I'll let you think of this through. Horse is running as fast as he can with his head down, like a bull charging somebody on the ground. And he ran directly into the only post in the whole arena, the one that was filled up with cement. And he cracked the top of his skull and broke his neck and died instantly. And this was a smart horse. This was a horse that was waiting for somebody to teach him. Somebody who was interested in developing a mature relationship instead of trying to get him to deny his physical pain, to deny his inspirational awareness. People do this to animals without ever realizing it. So if you're ever interested in learning how not to train an animal, but maybe teach yourself and learn how to develop a relationship with another self-aware, energetic being, give me a call. Write me a note. Because you see, that's what I'm trying to do through Isologic Radio. I'm trying to offer people the opportunity to change the way we see animals. Because what I've learned from the animals is very simple. It says that there's a challenge to the modern science that's being taught in school. That there's a challenge to the medical system that we've been trained to believe in. That there is an energetic connection that expands past the physical knowledge of you and I. And that when you are mature enough to develop that, you can go past and see much more than what you are today. So we just have to go on and learn not to believe, but maybe trust the energy that we feel. To trust the knowledge that's all around us. You see, your cat could be trainable if you changed the word and said developed. You develop a relationship with your cat. You have the opportunity to reach into his world and understand that there is much, much more going on than him just scratching his claws on your furniture. There's much, much more going on with your dog. So take a minute. Love yourself. Come back and visit us at Isologic Radio. Have I stirred up your thoughts? I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. What I'm trying to do right now is to say that we have our blinders on. We think because we have cell phones and computers and medicine and how you can go down any list you want, we're educated. We have a piece of paper that says we have knowledge, some type of knowledge. I think in the greater way of looking at life is that we're actually detaching ourselves from a knowledge that's already existing. And when that process is complete, I think maybe the human race is going to be in some pretty dire straits. You see, when we are creating education systems that say our children don't have time to go out and run and play, when we are teaching ourselves that medicine supersedes nature, then I would question that seriously. You see, we're natural. Medicine did not create mankind. Mankind created medicine. And the energy that's in medicine takes us away from being natural. So if we are natural and we have the knowledge of nature and we understand the application of natural energy, then we can stay connected to a natural system. But when we move past that and we get into all the things that society has trained us into believing we need, then we are actually denying ourselves. And we're setting ourselves up for disease. And we're setting ourselves up for emotional distress. So just by standing still and pretending that maybe you're a pyramid, give yourself permission to let your imagination go. If you're at work and you're in a cubicle and it's just boring, 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 the same thing over and over and over again, give yourself a break. Sit there. Just take a breath. And you don't have to shut the voices off in your head, but just go, feels good to be alive. I think I'll honor how I feel inside. That little spark of sunshine. The thing that kind of wants to fade and die away when I get stuck in this routine. The thing that tells me that I'm just one of many lesser things. You see, you're not. You're one of many greater things. And so maybe find a group of like-minded people. Maybe find a group of people that are into holistic animal care, natural pet training, natural horsemanship, organic farming. There are all kinds of resources out there that are just waiting for you to reach out and say, hey, I would like to gain knowledge so that I can use my imagination to expand what we already know. You see, sitting still, you vibrate. You're alive. You're full of energy. Your animals are alive and full of energy. And we think that we're not an animal, that because we stand upright and we have intellectual thoughts, that we are superior than the dog, the cat, or maybe the duck or the goose that's flying overhead. But are we really? Because you see, they live in a natural world. And in that world, they are so adept that if man had not done what he has done to this place, the planet, that maybe their lifespans would be much greater. You see, I don't think we know everything there is to know in history. I don't think the record of the earth is complete. And I do believe that there are people, that there is energetic wisdom present that knows what we should be focusing on. I also think that there's an agenda that trains man to disconnect himself because our emotional energy, our consciousness, can then be redirected to be used to maybe not grow the human race. Maybe to stop the human race from actually experimenting with the imagination. As you see, when you disconnect from the training program, you have the freedom of thought. It's just like when I train my dogs, and they don't ever, ever work on leash unless I'm taking them in public. They have the freedom to explore their environment, to become creative, to have spontaneous moments of absolute joy and love, and to share that with me. And when that exchange happens, there's growth. Because I'm not the leader, I'm a partner. And I have taken the time to develop partnerships with all the animals here at the farm. And when I work to develop an animal, to sensitize his body to the pain, to that trapped energy, when I do that, there's a moment of stillness. It's kind of like a breath or being in a state of meditative prayer. The animal stops and his mind falls deep inside his body and his breath becomes shallow. And as an observer at that moment, you can actually see their muscles tighten and relax. You may see a neurological twitch of the head and then stillness. And that's the beginning of connecting that animal's body to the purity of itself. That's when the animal moves from being trained and living in self-denial and pain to becoming aware that they no longer have to live in pain. And over a period of a couple of weeks or a couple of months, their bodies will change. They will heal. There's no operation. There's no medicine. There's no behavior modification. There's no special feed. And this is the gift of the hidden wisdom found in nature. And this is why I'm presenting to you the radio program of Isologic Radio. So take a breath. I have to say goodbye for now. And until next time, love yourself and dare to play with your thoughts.